live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray. We're coming to you virtually. We're not in our normal spot there in Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta, but we're really high on the bankers there at Renaissance who remain working throughout this pandemic, and they've done a great job for small businesses, and we know that personally from some of the folks that we work with. So if you need a more personal experience for your small business, go check them out. RenaissanceBank.com will lead you to locations across the South, over 200 of those locations, and they're happy to see you. You just need to make an appointment ahead of time. So check them out, Renaissance Bank. They're awesome, and can't say enough good things about their people. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now I want to welcome Dave Boss, and Dave is a managing partner with the Operations Group. Dave, welcome.
Good morning, John. Thanks for the opportunity. Great to be with you this morning.
It's great. How you doing? I'm doing great. It's great to be with you, and I've been looking forward to this because I'm going to learn something today. But for those that don't know you, don't know the Operations Group, why don't you describe a little bit about what you do and how you help folks out there?
Ah, very good. So the Operations Group is a consulting firm, and what we do very simply is we help companies improve profits by focusing on the four most important factors in operations, being safety, quality, cycle time, and productivity. And we use a range of methods that we're going to talk about today, maybe, including Lean and Six Sigma, to help companies improve their profitability.
Cycle time. Why don't you define that for those that don't know that term?
Okay. If you've ever ordered a shirt from Lands' End or L.L. Bean and you get the notice that it's back ordered and it's going to take 2 weeks, that's an example of cycle time. Mm. So it's anything that doesn't let you ship the product that day. In some industries you don't need to, but you want to be able to turn the product around as quickly as possible. That increases your capacity and usually your customer satisfaction as well. And it's the same thing for services.
Yeah, sure. Sure. That makes sense. Now, Dave, I don't know a lot about your discipline, but I'd have heard of time and motion studies, and those have been around a while, I know. So is that what we're talking about here, or how does that fit into the work that you do?
Well, certainly time and motion studies were, a predecessor, the grandfather of what I'm going to be talking about today. Around the turn of the century was when industrial engineering was first conceived, and some of the more famous people you would have heard of, you and I are probably even not old enough to have seen the original movie Cheaper by the Dozen, which was the story of Frank and Lillian Gilbreth, who had 12 children, and they applied time and motion studies to raising their family. But there was a remake in 2003 with Steve Martin and Bonnie Hunt that you may be more familiar with. But that family was considered some of the fathers of industrial engineering. Henry Ford, Frederick Winslow Taylor, some of the more famous people. The issue with those time and motion studies was it was efficiency at almost all costs. Work was defined and simplified to its basic tasks so that everything became very repetitive, and employees were told what to do without getting a lot of input from them. So they were treated more like machines. And one of the things that we try to look for today is getting employees to look at their work and come up with better ways of doing it, not just being told what to do. If you fast forward to after World War II, the country of Japan was annihilated during the war, both the conventional bombing and the atomic bombs. But the United States wanted to help them get back to be productive, you know, members of the world economy. But they had no money, no capital, and they would have to compete on the world stage with big American industrial steel mills and auto factories, but they just didn't have the money. So they built on those concepts from those early pioneers like Taylor and the Gilbreths and Henry Ford, but had to find ways to compete with very little resources. And so the best thing that they were able to do was be able to continually get their employees to come up with little improvements. And this eventually led to, if you remember, in the 1970s, the Japanese started kicking our butt with cars and inexpensive electronic devices. And these were direct descendants of the work that some American pioneers did with especially Toyota. And some of the other Japanese companies. So yes, that is the forerunner of what we're talking about. Specifically today, we'll be talking about lean manufacturing and Six Sigma, two very interrelated methodologies to help any business improve their processes and therefore their profitability.
Folks that are in the manufacturing industry are quite familiar with these terms. Lean manufacturing, Six Sigma. I mean, those are pretty ubiquitous terms in that industry. But the principles from those terms apply to a lot of different industries, right?
That's exactly right. And you know, without giving you a 6-week course on either one, lean manufacturing is basically looking for waste in processes. If people do work, there's a process involved. If a process is involved, it can be improved, and it always has some type of waste. It turns out there are 8 types of waste. Probably the most important one is the thing that Henry Ford and those other pioneers pretty much ignored, which was the waste of human potential, the intelligence of the employees. They're more than robots. They, if somebody would just ask them, they've got all these ideas about how to make things better, do things quicker, improve quality. So that's lean manufacturing. The other program, the other methodology I talked about was Six Sigma. Mm-hmm. And it's got a little bit different approach, but it basically capitalizes on statistics to try to make any type of these work processes more repeatable. If we get people to do things the same way, and then, you know, imagine going to McDonald's and every time you go to order a Big Mac, it comes out differently because people do things in different ways. Mm-hmm. Six Sigma tries to get everybody to do things the same way, so you have a common starting point to improve any process. Do those definitions make sense?
Absolutely. Now, let's dive in just a little deeper here because you, let's talk about maybe doctors. You're telling me you're going to tell a doctor how to efficiently examine a patient, or how's I'm being facetious here, but what are you telling us folks like that think, well, hey, there's no way you can really tell me how I need to examine a patient, for example.
Right. And that's the reaction, not only from doctors, but think of even corporate positions where relationships are more important than process. So mm-hmm. Think salespeople, HR people like that. But since you mentioned doctors, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. So I would never dare to impinge on the time that the doctor is spending behind the closed door of the exam room with the patient. You know, he went to 6 or 8 years of school and 8 or 10 years of internships and residencies. I have no clue. So that's sacred. That's off limits. But let's say that doctor is part of a practice, and on average, Monday through Friday, assuming he doesn't take off Wednesday afternoons to play golf, but Monday through Friday, he sees 15 patients a day. what if we could improve all the things that don't involve his time behind that closed office door, and move him from 15 patients a day to 20 patients a day.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's seeing 25 more patients a week, and he's either billing the insurance company or the patient or Medicare for those additional fees, while not sacrificing any time with those patients. So we look at things like who else can do the work that the doctor is now doing, you know, maybe a much lower paid administrative assistant, sometimes a nurse or a junior doctor. Or we can make sure that every exam room has got all the equipment and tools and devices needed and supplies before the doctor walks in, so he doesn't have to walk out and waste time doing all that. And these type of things also make the patient experience much better. If I might offer another example,
sure.
You know, moving on to a salesman,
mm-hmm.
Again, Dave, how are you going to tell me how to sell? This is all about relationships. There's no process involved. Again, I'm going to treat the time that that salesman has with his client or her client as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know anything about sales,
mm.
But what if we examine that traditional sales pipeline, the funnel, where you start off with a potential client wanting something, moving into them becoming a lead and then qualifying them as a prospect, putting a proposal together and resulting in an order. And at each step of that funnel, more and more of those potential clients go away, so that, you know, if you're lucky at the end of that, maybe 10% of your leads have turned into paying customers.
Mm.
What if we fixed that funnel by looking at previous sales, so that at each step of that narrowing down of that sales funnel, we improve that percentage by 1%. So imagine if we can help a salesman without doing anything with what he tells the customer in that sacred time, but move their win rate from 10% to 15%. Just think about the increased revenue and profits, both for his company and in his pocket for the commission or bonuses that he's going to earn. So when I can explain things to people in terms that affect their pocketbook, usually that resistance starts to melt away a little bit.
I would think so if folks understand the bottom line. I mean, what you're talking about is really being able to service more revenue potentially with the same existing time constraint, same overhead, so forth. And that automatically by definition means more to the bottom line, right?
It does. I mean, sometimes there may be an investment required, but always if an investment required, we put a business case together to show an ROI, a return on investment for that money. And oftentimes it's not with the same overhead. You know, since we're looking for waste, a lot of times we can do things with less overhead. One of the keys to success in what I'm going to explain as a cultural transformation in most companies is, you know, employees think about process improvement, reducing costs and all that, and they worry about their jobs. So leading companies that embrace this make a commitment to their employees when these programs start, that if you participate and give us your brain power in making things better, we'll promise you, you're not going to lose your job based on this activity. Now, I can't promise you that COVID's not going to come around and you'll lose your job for that.
Sure.
But it's not going to be for making things better. I mean, think about it. What company wouldn't want to, you know, either find new place or give new training or give a promotion to somebody that's helped them make more money?
Folks, we're here chatting with Dave Boss, and Dave is a managing partner of his own firm, the Operations Group is the name of his firm. Dave, talk a little bit about how you assess a client and how maybe somebody gets in touch with you and they want to improve their processes. I mean, how does that engagement work? How do you assess what their issues are and, you know, what needs to be done?
Another great question, John. So a typical engagement involves an initial type of assessment. Someone contacts me because they're struggling, usually with profitability. And believe it or not, although I'm not an expert in almost any of the industries that I go into, I've been able to provide great value in a range of industries, ranging from large mechanical equipment, hand lotions and consumer packaged goods, microprocessors, a window and door manufacturer, and a range of other types of companies. What I bring to the table is this understanding of process, understanding of a wide range of tools for collaboration with employees, documenting their processes, and helping them think of better ways to do their work. So I'll come in, but even without that knowledge of that particular industry, if it's new to me, usually I've probably got some ideas within a day or two of how to improve things. But that's not the trick. The trick is, the key to making this work is you have to bring the employees along with you on this journey, this cultural transformation. So it's not good for a consultant to come in. You know, you get the thing, well, what the heck do you know about my business? You've been here for a day. You know, are you a genius? And I'm far from that. But we do things like get together cross-functional teams of employees from all disciplines to try to agree on how work is done today. Now, that sounds really strange. So let's say we're trying to improve a purchasing process to get materials or products into the company faster and more economically. Why would I possibly invite a salesman or an HR person to participate in trying to fix that? Well, one thing is when people try to describe their work, oftentimes they're kind of blind to the impact that their work has on the other departments, their teammates, and those people often bring different perspectives that the person doing the work never really thought about. It's a great team building exercise. About 2 years ago, we had a project at an Atlanta-based manufacturer called Tenkata. They're the company when you're driving down the road and you see the orange construction fencing to keep the dirt from coming into the street. That's one of the many products they make. One of the people that we invited to this 8 or 10 person team to fix a customer service process was a sales guy. I don't have time for this. Why in the world am I coming to this particular thing? I need to be out in front of my customer selling. Long story short, after this process of trying to document the customer service process from the time it's handed off until the customer was happy and paid the bill, was this person left that exercise with aha moments, epiphanies. No wonder it takes me 3 days to get a quote from you. I'm going to stop yelling now. I understand. I didn't realize all those things you had to do for me to receive that quote. And it happens in the other direction as well. So in order to find out what's going on in the company, it's a combination of looking and asking a lot of stupid questions and getting the right people across the company to tell us what's going on in the company and later work with them in trying to come up with better ways of doing things.
I really wanted to interject because you really made a couple of great points, and I hope I can do justice to them. I mean, one is that it's so important how you approach the client, because your client is not just the executive maybe or the owner of the business who hired you. Your client is really the entire group of employees, because you need their cooperation to make it work, because it's not just a negative thing. It's a positive thing. You want their collective brain power because they can contribute to this effort. And that's a really important point I think you're making there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And just because I'm careful about bringing them along doesn't mean it always works. I had a client about 3 years ago in Kennesaw in the Atlanta area, and they were a manufacturer of aircraft parts, you know, serving companies like Boeing and Martin Marietta, those types of companies. Had great sessions with the employees, getting their ideas, bringing them to the table. But when we presented them to management, it was a privately owned company. The leadership team embraced it, at least the CEO and the COO. But over the ensuing week or so, the other managers were able to convince them, you know, why do we need to do anything? This is an outsider. You know, everything's fine. And, you know, my question to him was, well, if everything's fine, why has your profitability come down? Why have your employees come up with all these ideas? But because for whatever magic reason, I couldn't crack that code of bringing those employees along, you know, what ended up happening was they were able to talk the leaders out of making change. And as you probably realize, human nature is very resistant to change. You've heard of things like not in my backyard, not invented here. Mm-hmm. That's for a reason. Usually when I go into a customer, I find 10 or 15% of the employees are ready for change. They're so excited that somebody's finally asking their opinion. Mm. About 20% are naturally resistant. They're not going to let you do anything. They feel like they're so valuable that they don't have to change despite the problems in the company. And then everybody in the middle is taking a wait and see approach. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to begin working with those people who are embracing change to show some early successes. And it's amazing that when people see what's going on, it's not just making more profit. It's making the jobs easier for people. If they're doing manual labor, better ergonomics, so they don't have a backache when they go home. Mm. And I was, as an employee, leading a company down in Florida a few years ago. We implemented this lean manufacturing in a particular factory. And after just a few days, you know, it was a pilot program in one department. We had employees from other departments. Why don't we get to make these changes in our departments as well? Mm. So rather than shoving this down their throat, you know, they saw these early successes and how their coworkers were benefited as well as the company. And it made the transformation much easier.
Folks, we're here with Dave Boss, and Dave is with the operations group. He's a business process expert. Dave, talk about the kind of clients that you work with. I mean, we've talked about manufacturing, but maybe you can be specific about the clients that are best fits for you.
So really, as hopefully you've gotten a little appreciation for, these methods and techniques, work across almost any companies and industries. But, you know, there is a limit to my experience. And although I have worked in, those different manufacturing concerns I've mentioned before, I've also been in an insurance company and a finance and accounting department and many others. But for me, that ideal client is either producing a product or they're doing service, meaning they're dispatching their employees to customer locations or doing work in their own facilities. Typically they're got revenue of 100 million to a billion. But and so sometimes I have to say no when a customer approaches me. But the nice thing is I intentionally keep a very broad network of people who I'd consider experts in their own fields. So, for example, I've got a good friend who I've referred a number of times, and he has a sales consulting company. Another friend started up in the last few months a marketing consulting company, strategic planning. And so it's usually I don't say no. If I can't do it myself or I don't have time, can I introduce you to my friend Jim, for example? He's helped a lot of companies like yours with this exact problem.
So what are the, I guess, factors? You mentioned declining profitability, declining profits as one factor, but I'm curious about other factors that business owners, whether manufacturing or not, should be looking for to determine whether they are in need of calling you in.
So if the company has extensive metrics and measurements of their business, it's not really hard for them to recognize, because they'll see that their, you know, like you said, their profitability is declining. Their on-time delivery percentage is going down. In other words, they're not shipping. You know, it used to take 6 weeks to make a delivery. Now it's 8 weeks, even pre-COVID. If they're less sophisticated in terms of the amount of measuring that they're doing, you know, perhaps with a smaller company, there's a lot of visual. The workplace is disorganized. People are walking around a lot. One exercise that the business owner or the executive can do on their own is go out onto the floor, whether it's factory or even in a white collar environment where people are doing computer and paper processes, and stand in one place for an hour and just look around. So using a factory as an example, the only time in the ideal situation that an employee should be walking around is he needs a break. He wants to get a Coke. If he's still a smoker, he wants to go outside and get a cigarette, needs to go to the bathroom, needs to make a phone call. But I said needs, and it's the employee's decision that he wants to get up, get away from the workplace for, you know, that purpose. He shouldn't have to walk to go find tools, go find spare parts, go get better instructions to do the work. And it's amazing what you see when you just stand there and just take note of why people are walking around. Now, you need to communicate with them that you're not the productivity police. You're trying to help make their jobs easier. So you're sure to ask them, why are you walking? You know, this is not punishment. This is, you know, this is getting your ideas for how could we help you to stay at your workplace if that's what you want to do at that particular moment. And I talked about in lean manufacturing, we're looking for waste. Waste is anything that doesn't add value in the customer's mind. So if the customer knew that they were paying for this particular thing that goes into the price of the product, it's waste if it's not adding value, if they wouldn't willingly pay for it. So somebody walking across the factory to get a tool, or an accountant walking across the office to get a Xerox copy of something, most customers wouldn't willingly pay for that if they knew that that inefficiency was built into the price.
Makes perfect sense. Now, Dave, I have to assume that a lot of businesses have had to change processes based on COVID-19 and social distancing and that kind of thing. How do you help clients that suddenly their business processes are a little bit in a disarray, maybe?
So unfortunately now it's more than a little bit in disarray, and there's two polar opposites of what I'm finding among my clients and potential clients. Mm. There are companies that are thriving with record sales. I've got a customer in the pharmaceutical distribution business that is experiencing record sales by 20%. I mean, I guess there's a lot of people that are depressed and need depression medicines during what's going on in our country right now. Mm. Between the epidemic and the protests. A skincare products company, you know, when you make a lot of, when you use a lot of hand sanitizer, your hands tend to dry out. And so they're booming. On the other side, especially early on, with some of my clients that had supply chains in Asia, in particular, they're in addition to orders being cut back because their customers had so much uncertainty, their supply chains, where they're getting their products and materials from, shut down. So in both cases, and I don't see too much in between. They're either thriving or they're, you know, I'll be happy if they can keep their doors open, you know, much longer. But in both cases, process improvement can help them. So if they've got record sales and they want to be able to deliver on time and take all these orders and not put everything on back order, now's the time to improve those processes, be more efficient, take down the delivery times, get your costs more competitive so you make even more profitability. And when you come out of whatever we're going through now, if we ever do, you've got a leg up on your competition. On the other hand, if you're struggling and wondering, you know, even with the PPP loans and all the assistance, how are you going to keep the doors open? You know, maybe the answer isn't getting rid of your employees. It's helping them do their work better, faster, et cetera. And again, when we come out of the pandemic, those companies will be much better positioned to compete with, you know, the usual cast of characters.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Now, Dave, as we draw to a close, one thing I want to make sure we mention is that you work with companies, not just in the U.S., but you're fluent in Spanish and Portuguese. So you've got quite a reach that goes beyond just companies that are here in the United States.
That's right. I'm actively seeking assignments throughout Latin America and even Spain and Portugal in Europe. I have, like you said, I have fluency in Portuguese and Spanish. Probably the most likely clients would be either companies here that want to do business in Latin America or companies that have operations in Latin America that would like an American perspective on improving profitability. And, you know, there'd be no greater joy than being able to work with folks in their own language in these foreign countries, assuming that we can get on planes to get admitted to foreign countries. But, you know, we're probably talking next year. But yeah. I would love to have that opportunity.
Dave Boss has been with us. He is with the operations group. Dave, this has been great. Lots of things, I think, for folks to think about, particularly as they navigate this environment. And I'm sure there are folks that have heard some of what you've had to say and might want to be in touch. Why don't you tell them how they can do that?
Probably easiest would be by phone, 470-362-8438, or drop me an email. Now, this is going to be a mouthful. It's pretty tough these days to find untaken URLs for your email domains, but
right.
That would be dave@leansigmaops.com, leansigmaops.com. Love to hear from you and brainstorm, you know, with any of your listeners about, you know, what I can help them with or what somebody else can help them with, or just for a talk.
Sounds great. Dave Boss, the Operations Group. Dave, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity again, John, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah. Thank you. Folks, if you've got some problems that involve maybe administrative tasks that you know you need to outsource, you've got some bookkeeping issues, marketing help that you need, well, I've got an answer for you that involves picking up the phone and giving Essie Escobedo a call. Now, she's the chief executive angel over at Office Angels, and this firm has been, Essie's firm has been around for 18 years, and they've been virtual that whole time. So they know how to work in the current environment. And Essie listens to what your problem is, and she picks a great angel for you out of her team of angels. They fly in, get the job done, and fly out. So give her a call, 770-442-9246, or go to officeangels.us. You'll be delighted to know Essie. I work with her myself, and she is terrific. Folks, just another quick note that we are on all the major podcast apps that you can, that's where you can find our show. That would be Apple, Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We could go on and on, but just search for North Fulton Business Radio and on your favorite podcast app. We would love it if you give us a nice review on any of that, those apps, because it helps folks find the show. And when folks find the show, they get to hear from great business leaders like Dave and hopefully get connected with them. So your help in that on that front would be great. You can find our entire archive of shows at northfultonbusinessradio.com. We're now up over 260 shows of great business leaders over the last 4 years that we featured here in the North Fulton, in greater North Fulton area. We're on social media, North Fulton BRX, on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, so you can also connect with us there. So for my guest, Dave Boss, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.